Welcome to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you to Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, for sponsoring the show. I got a few text messages from Andy McCormick over there. If you are one of those ones out there eagerly awaiting the Howa Superlight in 22 ARC, I just got a picture of the warehouse, and there are, gosh, it looks like about 8 pallets of the things. So they are in now. If you've been waiting on a back order, they're going to start coming out just in time for spring and summer and getting outdoors and shooting. And I do not want to go down a rabbit hole, because right before we walked in, Dave and I were talking about the spring.
Oh my God, the spring fever. Just eating us alive right now.
Yeah, I told Dave I had an appointment down off Riverside this morning, and man, I just couldn't stop staring at the river and the bugs coming off and the sunlight. And I could not hang with the conversation. I was 1,000 miles away.
Yeah, you were tying flies. You're like, oh, look at that eddy right there. Yeah. I bet you there's, yeah.
So anyway, big time business boy stuff. What do you want to talk about?
No. Yeah.
This weekend's show, we are going to be going through, man, I won't even call it housekeeping. It's just some news stories that have popped up. And shout out to Phil Galbraith, our news and traffic guy on KKFT during the week. He sent these to me.
Yeah, they're good ones.
Yeah, they are. And then the big one we're going to cover is a bill to allow the use of hounds for hunting bears in California. And if you've listened to the show long enough, you know exactly where I come down on using dogs to hunt bears. For now, let's start with archery stuff coming up, Dave.
Yeah, this weekend is the Winnemucca Indoor 3D. That's where I'm at right now.
Winnemucca. Taking your place on the podium?
We'll see.
How do you feel about the competition out there?
Yeah, the competition in my division is strong.
Yes, it is.
Very strong. It's going to be a lot of fun. Definitely. I've got some really solid competition, which I absolutely love, because I know them all, and they're great guys. They're a hoot to shoot with.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to it. The last few shoots, us seniors, is where we're senior division. We've been putting up better numbers than like the adult divisions and everything else. So it's going to be pretty awesome. So, but that's this weekend. If you, if you're listening to us, you're probably not at the shoot, but just think next weekend, we have the exact same thing going on in Fallon. At the Fallon Indoor 3D shoot. And that's the last of the indoor series. So right after that, we get right into outdoor season. Also, if you're out and about today, there is also the shootout in Carson City.
Yes,
the Hell or High Water. The one day out there, that thing is a blast, because the course is really well laid out. You know, you're not having to climb hills or do anything crazy like that. It's really level, and the shots are really well done. It's a good warm-up.
And so, I love the outdoor stuff. I like the indoor stuff, too. Unfortunately, I'm going to be missing the Winnemucca shoot right now, because I got something else going on in my life that I got to take care of. I like archery. Well, I won't even say I was trying to be vague there, like, oh, something else in my life. So me and my family do jujitsu here in town, and I like archery and the competition at archery events, because you have genuine respect and friendship with the people you're shooting against.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I just competed in the jujitsu tournament, and I had no love for my competitors. It was just like, I'm going to choke some fools today. And there was no camaraderie or anything. It was just pure aggression. Archery, on the other hand, I
totally
love going
different.
To these shoots. Yeah, you're friends with these people.
Exactly.
It's fun.
Every year when we go out to Redding or go up to Cougar Mountain or Bend, Oregon shoot or something, you walk in and, you know, you may have not seen these people for, say, a year, because you haven't been up there in a year. But you walk in and they're like, hey, what's up? How you doing? How was your year? And, you know, you're shooting with them at the line, because you can have, you know, 12, 15 or so people at each stake or, you know, each target. And it's just a big, fun event.
Genuinely happy when someone shoots well.
Oh, yeah.
Even though they may beat you, you're like, dude, that was, holy smokes, that was an incredible shot.
Oh,
I'm happy for you.
There have been several times where it's like neck and neck, and it's coming down to the last arrow. And I'm always like, hey, man, you just focus on the shot. And, they beat me, they beat me. I don't care. Yeah. I ain't paying my mortgage.
Exactly.
You know, yeah, I'm just out there to have a good time and shoot my bow. For me, that's what it's all about. I mean, I've got enough belt buckles and plaques and ribbons.
Nice
and,
flex, Dave.
Yeah, nice flex, yeah. I don't need any more.
Hey, let's talk about bows real quick. We're going through some of the same things, I think.
Yeah, we're both shooting brand new bows this year. I am shooting the new Darton Sequel 35 ST2, and you have
how
a
you rattled that off the top of your head is still beyond me.
A Dedek memory, baby.
I'm shooting the and Matthews
Lift X 33. Yeah, the 33.
Yep.
They both are really smooth shooters. That Darton is just such a nice shooting bow. I am definitely on the struggle bus with just getting it tuned to me.
Yes.
You know, my previous bow, there was very little hiccups.
Right.
You know, I dialed it in. I paper tuned it. I set it all up. I got it all dialed up. And she just shot awesome. The whole thing, the hold in the hand, I mean, the release, everything was just like crisp.
Now
I'm like, okay, let's move this. Let's change this. Let's slide this. And you're going through the same thing.
100%.
And what keeps us going is this, the darn bows shoot so nice.
There's an aspect of that Matthews that I refuse to give up, which is that post shot, how it feels when you shoot it in the post shot.
Yeah.
The problem is there's other little idiosyncrasies with that bow that I'm having to dial out.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a lot of analogies that could be made here, but we talked about how you get to a point in archery and it's a deep rabbit hole.
Oh, dude.
Where you know what you want and you've shot enough bows and you've shot for long enough that you chase these little aspects of each bow. And same thing with you. I hunted with and shot that Prime RVX 34 last year.
Yeah, which is an awesome bow.
Like, I threw stabilizers on it. It sat right in my hand perfectly. The bubble was level. I shot it well. I went, hey, this is great. But you've been shooting archery long enough. There was one thing I couldn't get past with that bow. And I still have it and I still shoot it. It's great. But it was the post-shot feel of the bow. I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
So the Matthews has that, but does not have that built-in stability like the Prime.
Right.
And
right.
So it's almost like I made...
you got to counter it.
Yeah, I made the comment to you, like, I wish I could go back to not knowing anything. And it's just like, I'm going to shoot the same bow for like 7-8 years, and this is just my bow, and I don't know any better that it feels like trash. I kill stuff with it, so I'm happy.
Yeah.
You get to a point where you're like, I know what a good bow should feel like. And that's a problem sometimes.
But yeah. And just to clarify why we're getting so in the weeds about our bows.
Yeah.
These are our competition bows.
Yes.
So these are bows. I mean, we're shooting targets that are the size of a nickel.
Right.
At 20 and 30 yards. And then the biggest target is the 103 yards. And it's a
Bigfoot's about
it's
like
a eight inch. Yeah. It's an 8-inch round target. So 8-inch group.
Yeah,
at 103 yards, and everything else is much smaller. Then you go all the way down to competition, Vegas faces and stuff, where if you're not shooting X's, you're not competing. And that is the size of, what, a nickel?
Yeah, basically.
And you have to hit that 30 times in a row?
For a perfect score,
For a perfect score.
A 330X. Yeah.
So that's why we're talking, like, we're trying to fine-tune these bows for that type of precision. This isn't the hunting bow where at 20 yards all the way out to 50 or 60 yards, you can shoot something the size of a hubcap.
And be good.
You know, a car's hubcap at 14, 15 inches, and you're still going to kill the animal. I mean, you can have that much slop in your shot and still put animals on the ground. That's the difference. That's why a lot of you might be out there like, why are these guys making such a big freaking
deal? Who cares?
Deal?
Go shoot it.
That's why.
But accuracy, if you're just getting started in the archery world, accuracy is relative.
Yeah.
And so that's the problem when all you know is the lungs on a mule deer or an elk or whatever, and you can hit that, That's your relative accuracy, and you're good with it.
Oh, heck yeah.
When you start diving into the other...
Oh, man, when you swing that door open to competition archery...
Madness.
Dude, it will. Yeah. You tend to bring a bottle of bourbon to all shoots.
Yeah, that's a fact, yeah.
So, but it's been fantastic, and yeah.
So if you're interested, there's a bunch of cool shoots coming up. There's one this weekend, so we're pre-recording. But make sure you get out, and man, they all support phenomenal organizations across the state. Fallon Bowman, the Winnemucca Archers Club. The money goes to a good use, so go sign up, get out, shoot your bows at some of these things. And if you make it out there, hey, introduce yourselves to Dave and I. I love meeting people that listen to the show.
It's really cool.
Fascinating. Yeah. Coming up, we'll get into some news stories. We'll get into some bear hunting. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you are just joining us, the show is Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you miss a segment of the show, we're on Apple Podcasts. We're going to be on Spotify soon or in Google Podcasts or whatever. I'm working on that. And you can always go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab. All the past episodes are there. Thank you to Truck Envy on South Virginia Street for sponsoring the show. Do you want to do the fish thing first, Dave?
Yeah, the battle against people dumping their aquariums into local ponds.
I'm going to say something strong real quick.
Say it.
If you're a bucket biologist, damn you.
Yes, yes.
you screw up good things for the rest of us.
You not wanting to flush your kid's goldfish or what have it down the toilet because you think it's mean, so you're going to let it go at your local pond,
dude,
is about the dumbest thing you can do. You are really affecting the habitat, the ecosystem that's already there and established. You're messing with the natural order of things by doing so.
Amen.
You know, right now what... They've caught an alligator out of...
I wanted to ask you about that. Yeah. An alligator.
A friggin' alligator out of a pond in Las Vegas, in the Las Vegas Wash, that somebody... People get these dang things, and they get too big to some point, and they're like, oh, man, bathtub's too small now. I'm going to let Clyde go tonight.
Dude, having lived in the Southeast, and I used to fish those backwaters and stuff, I can remember seeing 8-10-foot alligators back in... They get... Big.
Huge. Oh, yeah. Huge. Huge.
You're not keeping that as a pet in the back, like at your apartment complex in Vegas.
They don't think about the long-term effects of this stuff. They buy it when it's, you know, the size of your palm and you're like, oh, this is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. 6 months later, it's, 5 feet long and you're like, oh.
Just don't do it, people. Do it. And this is why there's nothing worth catching in Virginia lakes anymore.
Yeah.
But share some of you had some funny stories about people letting stuff go.
So this was like, I don't know, this is like 20 years or so ago. There was a young girl and she was fishing at Virginia Lake. If anyone from the past, you know, out there remembers Virginia Lake, during the summer, man, it was like the place to go fishing urban-wise. You know, all of us, I did it. Parents would drop us off on Saturday and we'd fish there. And
that's awesome.
All day long, you know, it was fantastic. So this young gal was fishing with her dad and she ended up catching a piranha. Piranha out of Virginia Lake with Velveeta cheese.
Totally normal thing to find
totally
in
normal
Nevada.
Thing. Exactly. You know, as the years went by, if you walked around Virginia Lake, you would see goldfish cruising the edge all the time. They were all over the place. And now Virginia Lake's pretty much dead. They don't stock it any longer. The water quality is absolute garbage.
Yeah.
And it's just...
It's been ruined.
Definitely by the invasive aquarium dumpers
out there.
And now it's there's nothing they can really do with it. Because goldfish is... almost like a carp in a sense. It can survive with a lot less oxygen than trout
and dirty water and all of that.
So it's just kind of turned into a goose poop reservoir.
I told you the story. I can remember I used to go out and chase carp with a fly rod. Yeah. I would do that on the Truckee when they were spawning. They get in those big pods of fish. Anyway, I'm standing there one day and it's like, I can see 50 yards upriver this bright orange thing. And I'm going, what in the hell is that? Well, it was like a giant 8-10 pound goldfish swimming
like
with
a koi.
Carp.
Yeah, I big was old like, koi cruising around.
What in the world is this thing? So I know people are doing it in the Truckee too. Dave and I have talked about the bucket biology thing, but man, it really screws up a good thing when people do this.
Yeah, it does. I mean, a good example, probably the best example is, and not necessarily bucket biology, more so of the introduction of non-natives into a system.
Oh, yeah.
Australia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Australia is the king of introducing things that end up turning into absolute poop shows.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Over the years, what they've introduced these animals in order to fend off another animal.
Yes.
Like to control another animal,
yep.
They've brought in something else. First off, in the mid-1800s, they brought in rabbits to help with some of the vegetation issues.
Yep.
They went berserk. They brought in foxes.
Yep.
And then they brought in cane toads to deal with insect infestations.
Yeah.
That went bonkers.
Because foxes aren't going to stop it, just the rabbits.
No.
Yeah.
So then the toads went bonkers. Now there are millions of them. And then they brought in goats to help deal with some of the vegetation. Didn't work.
Yeah.
Sheep. Camels. They got friggin' wild camels in Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
To deal with some stuff. Horses, or what they call Brumbies.
Yes, yeah.
So
yeah,
they call them Brumbies now so that they can hunt them.
Right.
Yeah.
Just
so,
reclassify them. They're
just
Brumbies.
Reclassify them, yeah. But carp, European blackbirds, and starlings to deal with stuff. Mice. They've brought in different kinds of snakes to deal with the rodents that they brought in. And then mongoose to deal with the snakes.
Yep.
So Australia's an absolute
disaster.
Just an absolute disaster when it comes to the introduction of other animals. And since this has occurred, Australia has seen something like 39 of their native species have gone extinct.
Right.
Main reason is due to introduction of non-native species into the ecosystems.
Yeah. I'll catch some flack for this, for saying this, but it cracks me up when man likes to, we put ourselves on this pedestal outside of the animal kingdom.
Yeah.
And we decide that we're the arbiters of what Mother Nature needs.
Right.
And it's like, dude, just leave it alone. It'll figure it out. I think we should take our place in that food chain and kill things and eat them.
Yeah.
But when we start this, like, oh, here's a cane toad to deal with this, and here's this to deal with this. It's that butterfly effect that occurs. We have really screwed this up.
Yeah, and there's no going back. And you can't. You can't fix it. So
it's not an etch-a-sketch you can shake and erase.
Exactly. So they brought in thousands of feral cats at one point to deal with the mice that they had brought in, 10 years prior.
Suddenly they can't find native songbird species.
It's crazy. And now they're dealing with a situation where they're threatened and endangered species in Australia. They're looking at 82% of them going extinct in the next decade because of introductions.
We know best.
They can't control it now.
Such a disaster.
They just can't control it now. It's just gone absolutely crazy. Anybody out there that thinks it's okay to go
if you're listening
flush
right
them.
Now and you've got an alligator that you're thinking about throwing in the truck,
alligator,
just
crocodile.
Bring it over to Henry's house. I'll eat that sucker.
Yeah.
I like gators.
Dude,
so.
Gator's good.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
It's so good.
Don't
but
put it in the truckie. Get in touch with us. I'll give you my address.
Yeah.
Bring the gator over. I'll eat the sucker and no harm, no foul.
Right. Exactly.
I want to save some time for the bear stuff because something I'm passionate about. Let's talk about a Utah couple.
Yes.
Yeah, man. I hate doing these kind of stories. This
I
stuff
don't.
Occurs. Well, yeah, okay.
I think this stuff needs to be highlighted, idiots.
I hate it because I hate that we have to do it, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, so
yeah,
I'll let you
part.
Lead, Dave. Let's talk about this story.
Well, yeah, so these two individuals were caught in the act of harvesting a Nevada mule deer. I guess it was quite a bomber. It was a 5x4.
One of those border bucks.
Yeah, it was in area 114, so it's right on the border there. But they acquired tags falsely.
Yeah.
They falsified a bunch of documents, resident documents and stuff, and falsified the tags to acquire it. I think it was the Utah Department of Fish and Game notified the Department of Wildlife's Law Enforcement Division, and then they collaborated on getting all of the data and information to bust these two people. So,
and we've talked about it before. If you're committing wildlife crimes out there, I've made my jokes about it over the years, but man, I remember the story about that guy getting popped baiting bears or something.
Yeah.
If you're committing wildlife crimes out there, you're going to get caught.
Yeah. I mean, in today's age with everybody's
technology,
oh, everyone's got a camera in their pocket.
Yeah.
Everyone's videoing everything.
Yeah.
How many people get caught from the general public sending stuff into the authorities saying, hey, I caught this on video?
Yeah, yeah.
You can't argue video. It's like all these morons out there damaging Teslas right now thinking that, I'm going to get by it.
Yeah, no.
Teslas have like 15 cameras all the way around. You get within 5 feet of that thing and the thing turns on. It's its security system. Needless to say, going back to wildlife, with everything going on, so many of these crimes that are being committed are actually the beginning of getting these people caught is from the general public coming in and saying, hey,
I saw this while I was out hunting.
We saw some funky stuff going on here and we videoed it. And here's this dude killing the wrong thing.
The public treasury, I'll call it. Maybe that's a bad phrase, but I mean, what they're doing is they're taking stuff that belongs to you and me and every other member of the state of Nevada, a resident of the state of Nevada.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, man, sucks, but hey, there's that story. Do not go anywhere because we're going to get into some bear hunting, hunting with dogs, why I am a huge proponent of it, and why I think the Bear League sucks. Thanks for hanging in there over the break. And man, if you made it through that whole last segment where we soapboxed a little bit, kudos to you. Thank you to Shooting Performance Institute down there in Gardnerville. Again, man, it's that time of year you need to start, whether it's shooting your bow, shooting your rifle. And there is, I don't think there's anybody within at least three or four states with the level of experience and professionalism that Jim Irwin has down there. So check out shootingperformanceinstitute.com. Look at the course schedule, get in touch with Jim, and go make sure you are as prepared as possible this hunting season. We're going to do the last couple segments here on something. I like bear hunting. I like bears. I like the idea of bears more than an individual bear. So I absolutely think we should be able to hunt them. That being said, Dave, there's what, two new bills or a bill?
There's a bill.
A bill.
Well, there's two bills in relation to hound hunting in California, but the new bill is to allow it again.
Right.
The old bill removed it.
There's a new proposed bill to bring back the use of dogs in black bear hunting in California. SouthTahoeNow.com. Do better. Report the news. Don't editorialize. Your article sucks, Paula Peterson. There's a lot of that histrionic vocabulary in here where it's like the brutality, the scared bears. Hey, look, Paula, you don't need to editorialize. Just report on the bill. Definitely. I'm putting my soapbox away.
Yeah, no. You're good. You're good.
Okay.
You know, yeah, they just, you know, they got a Walter Cronkite it, man. Just give us the facts and let people make their own decisions.
This is the bill. This is what's in it. Yeah.
Right. You know, and this is what people are saying about it.
So do you want to talk about the bill a little bit, Dave? And
yeah, so the bill is Assembly Bill 1038 that would bring back the use of hounds or use of dogs to hunt bears in California. So this was outlawed back in 2012.
Yeah.
2012 by Governor Brown signed the bill SB 1221, which prohibited the use of dogs in pursuit of bears.
And so, bobcats.
And bobcats. Yep. And bobcats. This is just trying to bring it back. And this is led by Assemblywoman Heather Hadwick, right from Alturas.
Yep.
Just stating that with the problem that California is having right now with black bears, the population, and the human wildlife interactions that are going on because these bears are moving into urban communities. That's where
urban communities are growing.
And that's where a lot of the food is. I mean, they walk in there and so trying to counteract that by allowing hounds to be used to hunt to increase the number of bears that are harvested. I think California allows like 1,700 bears harvested a year?
50. Somewhere in there. Yeah, I'm nodding like I know the number off the top of my
it's
head.
It's something like that, and they don't reach that number. It's kind of like Nevada. We started out with 40 tags or 40 permits, and the Wildlife Commission decreased the number of permits to 37, but then increased that you can harvest 37 bears as well. So it was kind of like a give and take. And then in last year in 2024, the Wildlife Commission approved, I think they bumped it up to 42 tags or 42 permits with 42 bears being allowed to be harvested.
Right.
A certain amount of sows and certain amount of boars. And that's the kicker. Now, we've had a few years where the hunters have maxed out on sows right off the get-go, and it ended the entire hunt. Yeah. It's something like, I think it was like five or six sows could be harvested, and then the hunt just shuts down. Because you brought up a great point a while back, was the beauty of the hound hunting is you can get pretty close to the animal because it's being treed or...
Oh, absolutely.
And
yeah.
You can get up nice and close and see, is that a boar? Is that a sow?
Yeah.
Right?
Identification is way easier, and I'm a huge proponent of using hound hunting as an effective management tool for bear populations.
Yeah.
Yeah, for that simple reason. And generally speaking, if you do have a sow with cubs, those hounds are going to get on those cubs. Like, you're going to know, okay, oh, holy smokes, this is a sow, these are cubs. You can take a good look at them, and you can pull
the dogs off.
And you can make the decision to go find another bear, find a boar somewhere. When you leave it to like these 600 yard cross canyon shots,
you have no idea.
That's when sows start getting killed that shouldn't be killed.
Yeah. And their cubs are, like you were stating earlier, their cubs are 80 yards down the canyon.
You don't see them in the little draw or something.
Yeah. So you shoot the sow and then you walk up and you're like, oh, crud, that's a sow and there's cubs sitting right there.
I think if you want me to wax philosophical for a minute, I think that's the anti's Machiavellian masterstroke. They put us in these situations as hunters where they make it so difficult to do the right thing or make the decision that we would all make as ethical outdoors people that we wind up in these situations where it's like, oh, crap, man, I killed a sow or I did this, that, or the other thing. And then they can hold it up as an example of why hunting is, to quote, what the hell was her name?
Jennifer Faring?
Yeah, to... barbaric and cruel.
Yeah. And it's like, well, so's getting hit by a car and laying in a ditch for 2 days.
Starving to death. Starving with teeth that are nubs. Yeah.
Right. That kind of stuff. That's pretty cruel too.
So anyway, sorry, that was a sidebar.
Dude, that was a fantastic
sidebar.
And this is
all Henry's opinion and all Henry's thoughts on things, but that's what I really think they're doing.
Well, and that could definitely be it. I mean, that is one direction to go with it. So, but this bill just brings it back so that they can try to increase the harvest numbers, because as stated in this article, one document or the assemblywoman states that there's 60 to 80,000 bears in the state of California. Personally, that sounds like a pretty enormous number.
Does that sound strong to you?
It sounds super strong to me. Okay.
That's 80,000 is a lot of bears. Yeah.
But I definitely think it's more than the Bear League is saying, that there's only 20,000. I think there's more than that. The surveys that are done, you know, the Bear League states that surveys, you know, they can count one bear multiple times.
It's not how it works.
Obviously, you don't understand surveys.
You've been on bear surveys, right?
Right.
How does it work, Dave?
Well, a survey in general is you're not counting the same animal 10 times and like, oh, there's 10. I mean, it's not how it works. These protocols are set, and they're pretty well laid out over decades and decades of refinement. You know, hundreds of different biologists and professionals that are nitpicking these things and fine-tuning them to where that's just not how it's done.
You mean a bear doesn't walk behind a thick tree? You count it as one on one side, and then when it reappears, it's two?
Or he goes behind the tree and covers the white spot on his chest.
We'll actually talk about that in a minute, but keep going with how the surveys work. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not how it's designed. So I would say they're probably, I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen any of the data. I know the California Fish and Game have stated in here that, you know, the 60 to 80,000 is pretty thick. You know, I would definitely believe what the California Department of Fish and Wildlife would say, because they're the authority on it. They're the ones that are boots on the ground out there,
right,
doing the work. doing
and not
the surveys.
Weekend warrior
no,
boots
no,
on
no,
the
ground. No. This is this is day in and day out.
It's a job.
Professionals that are out there. So I would believe whatever they stated in their conservation plan.
Okay.
You know, they do state that bears aren't, they're not showing any sign of an increase or decrease in bear populations.
Oh, they're it's a static
population? It's stable.
Okay.
The kicker is it's still a problem. You know, there are a lot of bears getting into a lot of communities, and those are the areas that really need to be focused on.
Okay.
Are those urban interface areas.
I was going to say, nothing will screw up a mule deer herd bears coming out of their dens in spring.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we tend to talk a lot about like the urban interface areas and bears getting into trash and the problems that creates. But man, if you're a passionate mule deer hunter or blacktail hunter or whatever, holy smokes, man, a starving bear that just came out of hibernation, they're going to wreak havoc on those fawns.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah. So anyway. Yeah.
And it's not only that. I mean, this particular article and assembly bill is based on bears. There's a lot of animals that are now coming into these urban environments. You got bobcats, mountain lions, raccoons, skunks, because that's where a lot of food is and a lot of shelter. I mean, they're digging it. I mean, we're building it for them. We're providing it for them. So, but this bill seems to have a little bit of steam behind it.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Probably not a lot at this point in time. You know, they're showing something like 80% of Californians disagree with it, which that doesn't surprise me.
Well, that's
me
in
either.
This article, too. And I've already blasted
it. Yeah, and that doesn't surprise me. I mean, California isn't a lot of outdoorsy people unless you go to Northern California. Northern California, folks,
maybe
guys rock.
Places like Alturas, where this bill is coming out of. Yeah,
so.
Which Alturas, I love you. I love the Warners. I love Cedarville. Yeah. I love that part of California. Yeah.
Yeah, so in the article here it is, 1,700 permits a year, and they're not even hitting that quota.
Yeah.
So they're hoping that allowing the hounds hunting may increase that, but I don't think if they have that many bears, 1,700 a year still isn't going to fix or even come close to addressing the issue. In order to do that, I personally think that they would have to increase tags. Yeah. And if they're going to increase tags, they should increase the tags in the areas where the bears are causing the most damage or problems with the urban interface stuff.
Right.
You know, that's where they should focus it. Increase the tags and bring the hound hunting in and get some of these populations under control. That's just my 2 cents on that.
Well, I'll take that 2 cents, and unfortunately, we are up against a break. We will try to end the show on a more positive note, but shockingly, Henry still has a few things to say about bear hunting. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you to Battleborn Tree Service for hunters by hunters. Mike and the crew down there will take care of your property like it is their own. If you are just joining us, you're listening to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. And if you're still with us, thank you. Dave and I have had a lot of strong opinions this episode, but I don't know. Hey, maybe that's why you guys tune in. We're going to keep going on the bear hunt thing, and I want to bring up a couple examples. I'll go Alaska first, a state where you can use hounds, a state where, for crying out loud, if you're a member of one of the indigenous tribes up there, you're allowed to den dig. And if don't know what den digging is, folks, that is where you crawl into a bear's winter den and kill it in its den. And it's looked
while it's asleep, while it's hibernating.
And it's looked at as the only honorable way to kill a bear by these tribes.
Yes.
So they allow them to do it. Alaska has some of the most aggressive predator management practices, and the native predators in Alaska still inhabit 100% of their ranges. I would look at Idaho as an example of having a hound hunt for bears. Holy smokes, Idaho's bear population is doing great.
Oh, yeah. It's very much under a good management number.
Let's see. What else do I want to grind on? Oh, first and foremost, Ann Bryant from the Bear League. I cannot stand you. And when you bring up things like, I'm laughing because I'm starting to get that wild look in my eye, I think.
A little bit.
But when you bring up things like, oh, the survey is conducted incorrectly, if you've spent more than 2 minutes in the woods and you're looking at bears in their wild environment, not the ones off Kingsbury grade raiding trash cans, I don't know a hunter out there who can't look at bears and go, oh, that's this bear. They are like people. They are all very, very unique. And generally, if you know what you're looking at, you can tell them apart. So to say that the survey is incorrect and you're counting bears multiple times, give me a break. This ain't the weekend warrior crowd doing it. Last thing that I'm going to grind on the bear thing before I yield my time to you, Dave, is this whole angle with using the dogs. We're talking about our dogs and chukar hunting. When you have a dog that is bred for nothing except that aspect of hunting or whatever, we've tried to pull our dogs off at the end of the day, like, hey, your paws are shredded. Let's go kennel up. Like, I got to take care of you. They won't quit. That's all they know. So I hate the angle these people take with this, where it's like, oh, the poor dogs get hurt in the process. Look at any of the southeastern states. Look at Texas. I don't know why there isn't a big outcry about dogs getting killed on these hog hunts down there. These dogs are bred for nothing except that singular focus. I don't think that's a bad thing. And I think it would be cruel to take dogs out of that environment and say, well, you know, hey, you can't do this with dogs anymore. Now you got a bunch of houndsmen with these creatures that their sole purpose in life is to do this.
Well, and they're driven to do it.
In their DNA.
It is. It's ingrained in them.
Like, yes.
I didn't do a lot of training with Gage. I sent him off to a friend who initially did the training. 90% of his bird hunting knowledge is genetically wired in there. You know, like this last year when we were hunting, he tore up his left paw pretty bad.
So did Dixie. Yeah, really
bad. And I was trying to get him to come to me so I could throw him into my backpack and just carry him on my back and get him back down. There was no way in God's green earth he was going to allow me to do that. You can bandage me up when we're done.
Yeah.
But you still got two birds to shoot.
I've been around those, like, if I mispronounce this, don't crucify me over it, people, but those Cthulhu hounds they use for hog hunts. I've been around hounds for lion hunts and everything. And that's all that dog wants to do. That's all it knows. And I just don't understand why if there's going to be outcry, oh, the dogs could get hurt during a bear hunt. Where's the outcry for the Cthulhu hounds in the Southeast getting shredded on hog hunts?
Yeah. And the statistic is the death rate for a dog being killed is very minimal. It's under like 3%.
Yeah.
You know, very little. Where the hog hunting dogs, they're in like the 15% range of being not just killed.
Shredded.
They get shredded. Yeah. They get tore up.
You got to run them with Kevlar
lucky.
Vests.
They're hoping that they get killed because these boars, so aggressive.
Yeah.
Absolutely aggressive.
Razor sharp teeth.
Oh, and they will shred those dogs. But you're right. There's no outcry for that. There's no, you know why? Because you don't see boar stuffed
pig.
Animals. Yeah, you don't. But you got every kid holding a bear stuffed animal. Yeah. You know, it really comes down to, I mean, it's just so one-sided. It's just, well, it's a very cute animal and everyone loves bears and they're super cute and they're cuddly and the whole nine yards, where a pig is ugly.
We've
it's
talked
just a
about
gross,
it before, yeah. There,
yeah.
People have a just, weird thing with bears, and I don't get it. I got canine teeth, eyes in the front of my head. I'm just part of that food chain.
Yeah.
People tend to remove human beings from that, and they go, oh, well, look, I'm going to anthropomorphize this animal. And it's like, I don't know, man. I look at it, I see a bear. It's a bear. It's another animal. It's not, again, it's not Smokey the Bear.
Right.
It's not Yogi the Bear. It's just another predator on the landscape.
It's a bear. You know, when you start naming them and giving them fancy names and stuff, you humanize them, and it's just a dangerous combination. Like, I'm a very avid hunter, outdoors person. There have been plenty of times when I've been out and about, and I'll see a bear across the canyon, muddling through the bushes. I'll just sit there, and I will admire that thing, that beautiful wild animal cruising around, doing his thing. Absolutely gorgeous animals on the landscape.
100%.
When it comes to hunting season, I'll shoot it.
If I got a tag and it's legal, it's, yeah.
Yeah, and the big reason is hunting is the number one way of proper wildlife management, as we as humans keep encroaching into their habitat and they have nowhere to go. So you have to manage those populations.
Right.
And hunting is the number one way of doing it.
And this is your bailiwick. I mean, you deal with this Monday through Friday, 9 to 5.
Yeah.
So you get,
It's all around me. So, so you kind of get all the sides of it. You get the crazy side, the normal side, you get everything. And you just kind of take it all into a big bowl of soup and you just try to be the best you possibly can.
Keep the best bits.
Yeah.
Yeah. And look, I've used a lot of, I won't say strong language, but I've used some strong language to describe these people. But I just have this thing where I hate seeing this emotional language tied up in this stuff where they're cute, they're, what did she use in there? It's the brutality of it, the this, the that, the other thing. I can't stand that stuff. And I really, really hope this bill passes for the sake of these communities like Alturas and Cedarville and all these rural Northern California communities, because I do think it's the most effective way to manage these populations. Yeah, and I think it gives hunters one more tool, and you're absolutely right. One way or the other, I'm not going to use the Etch-a-Sketch analogy. I've already used the Etch-a-Sketch one. I won't use that. But like the fact of the matter is we are growing as a species, human beings, like we're spreading, we're building our nice log cabins back in the hills, and then a suburb pops up and everything.
Right.
You're not putting that, here's a good one. You're not putting that genie back in the bottle.
No.
So the only option is to hunt these things. It's not to put your head in the sand and go, we need to just leave them be, because they're going to get killed one way or the other.
Well, most of them, they'll end up starving to death.
And getting hit or whatever.
Out of sight, out of mind. When they go over the hill from your new golf course, where it used to be a deer wintering ground, and now you have a 500-acre golf course.
You brought up, you're just trying to get me fired up.
Yeah, man. You know, and they go over the hill and they starve to death and die. To you, it's like, oh, that was so cute. They just moved on and probably visited family in Nebraska or something. No, they went over the hill and they died.
Yeah.
Because animals do not know how to ration their food.
Yeah.
When they see it, they eat it. And whoever didn't get enough, guess what? You're going to die.
Yeah. I used that example where, look, if it becomes a problem bear, it's going to die one way or the other. And I don't understand how these people, like Ann Bryant, can absolve themselves of that process and go, okay, well, that's, maybe she doesn't agree with it. I don't know, for people listening, I don't know Ann from Adam. She could be an absolute sweetheart and crochet things for her grandkids. I got no idea, but I know that everything I've read that she has said, I vehemently disagree with. It's like, look, man, if the thing starts getting in trash and starts interacting with human beings, it's going to get killed.
Becoming somewhat domesticated.
Yeah, it's going to get killed. And I don't understand how she can be okay with a government agency doing it versus someone taking it, using the caul fat to make baked goods, using the meat to feed your family, using the on and on down the list.
Yeah.
I don't understand why one is bad and one is maybe less bad or more acceptable. All right, that is going to do it for us. Hopefully we see you guys out at some of these archery shoots. And sincere thank you to the show sponsors and for taking time out of your day as a listener to spend an hour with David.